Accession number 223555, rear 2.
Fred Wiltshire, Realto.
Carry on there. So this young girl said she'd tend his grave forever, but the War Graves Commission came along and they removed his body from the field where she buried him to the Hermanville Cemetery. And he was buried there as an unknown soldier. And in the preceding years, well, from say 46 years after, you know, it's information from a letter from a chap in America. They wanted to know who this chap who was killed at Colville. Well, I couldn't answer the question because I didn't know. I didn't know anything, you know. All I know that John Holmes and Sergeant Flaircuff in my history book was missing. And I thought, I didn't take much notice of it, but when I went on the 50th anniversary to Normandy, a captain at the Suffolk Regiment was at Hermanville Cemetery, and he said to me, he said, I got John Holmes' sister with me today, he said. He said, I'll introduce her to you. Because I didn't know who John Holmes' sister was no more. Anyhow, so he said, I'll go and find her. She's on the come here. But he went to find her, and she was gone. She'd got on the other coach and gone off. So he said to me, I said, well, will you be going to Bayer tomorrow? He said, no. He says, we're going to a Suffolk regiment memorial place. And so I said, all right. So, of course, I went to Bayer. And then I went from Bayer, from after we had the service of Bayer, went from there to Arromanches and done the march on the beach. Saw Prince Charles now come and shook hands with us all and thanked us for what we'd done. Like, you know, he said he wouldn't have liked the job. And we marched back off the beach, and we went back up to where the coaches were parked, and our coach had broke down, so we couldn't never had a coach go on. We went to the divisional blokes, what was there with their vehicles, where we've got food and drink and all that, and they said they would take us, and then they couldn't take us. So we were sitting about on the wall, and a chap came up to me, I don't know him from this day to that, and he just got hold of me, he said, come with me, and he took me down to this cafe place, and he said, introduced me to John Holmes' sister, and the mayoress of Colville, and the mayor of Colville, because the two that had seen to John when he was got wounded turned out to be the mayor and mayoress of Colville at the end, and 50 years later.
Coming back to 1944, were you in the attack on Hillman?
Yes.
Can you describe what you did, please?
Well, what we done, the Suffolk Regiment went up and took the place, didn't it? And all we had to do was lay down cover and fire all the time with our machine guns. There was 12 machine guns, you know, four to a platoon. And so we followed them in and give them cover and fire until they took Hillman, and then we retreated back to Colville for the night.
Was there much of an infantry battle for the Hillman?
Yeah, it was quite a set to there for a while, like, before we really captured it, like, you know. And after that, like, you know, we had a lot of mortar come back after from the Germans, like, you know, after we attacked Hillman.
Whereabouts on Hillman were you directing the fire?
Off the fields around Hillman, there's low fields, like, you know, and we give them cover and fire, like, you know, all machine guns. We was in contact with the Suffolk Regiment. The Suffolk Regiment took Hillman.
Were you aiming at the slits in Hillman?
We was aiming, well, we just, whatever, the old, all round there, like, there's all trenches and all that, all round Hillman, where the German infantry was dug in protecting Hillman, see? And we just give cover and fire, and eventually the Suffolks went and took it, and then we just retreated back to Colville for the night. And we got mortar bombed pretty well that night in Colville, but we never had no casualties or such there, and after that. the main coast is when we was going through, when John got killed, he died of his wounds, and several of the other chaps what was with him got wounded, like, you know. But from up to then, we didn't know it was John Holmes, because really he shouldn't, well, he should have been there, but he was a dispatch rider for Wright. And we don't know what happened to his motorbike, because nobody told us ever since, so I couldn't tell you. His motorbike was actually strapped to one of the carriers to go ashore with the platoon, see? And whether his bike got blown up or nobody knows to this day. Like that sergeant, O'Brien, what was with him. And I didn't know until I went to St Paul's Cathedral when I told you I met Sergeant Phipps. And I was talking to him about John Holmes and Sergeant O'Brien. And he said I was told, he said they saw Sergeant O'Brien floating back out on the roof of a vehicle, going back out to sea. So evidently he must have got drained in the end. We don't know this. That's what I was told by Sergeant Phipps, like, you know.
So you were martyred during the night. Did that do much damage?
No, not a great lot. No, because the mortars fell short of us, so we weren't too bad.
What happened the next day?
Well, the next day we moved on to, supposed to have been going to Corn, but, One eight five brigade was going up with Corn with the KSLIs now, but they got drove back D-Day, so we rendezvoused with them until we got further orders to move from there. Then from there we moved back to a place called Gazelle, pretty close to the BC Woods, and we was in this orchard in this Gazelle. We used to get shelled regular there, you know, the ATH just come tearing into the old orchard. But we used to get on shoots in there. We used to get at this orchard and get out on the road, and all of a sudden the shells just come in thick and fast. We only moved out of the orchard, so we don't know where they had a listening post or somebody was giving the information was on the move. But what we used to do from there, we used to get on what they call Harrison shoots. And we used to go up to near Labisi Woods and get the Vickers and drop them off on the ground, and used to fire a continue pattern of fire. The main fire was to fire into the woods, into the trees and that, to get the snipers out of the trees, because the infantry, what was in front, they took a terrible slaughter there, you know, the RURs and the KOSBs and the Lincolns, what was in that 9 brigade, and they really took a hammer in there. So we used to grab the regular on this Harrison shoots, and there was a Tiger tank knocked out down there, and every night you could hear the Germans come there and repairing it. So the next day we used to be in touch with the artillery and that, and they used to put down a barrage and knock it out again. And I've got the pair of binoculars upstairs, I'll show you later, from that tank, what I took off the tank in the end. It was very heavy, it was on top, and then I got them off and I took them off. And so anyhow, but we done the BC Wood, we stayed there for quite a while on these shoots from this orchard Gazelle. Then we made our way back to over at Pegasus Bridge. And we went up on the plane, and that's where we stayed in Orchard up there, up on the plane. And I'll give you a bit of information on the dinner.
What information is there?
The map of the place. I've got the.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Well, I'll find it. It's all right.
Yeah,
you carry on and describe what happened to you, and I'll find
them out. Yeah, so we made our play up to this up to the what they call the plain, and of course we had all that heavy rain, and of course everything got bogged down, and we couldn't. Even dispatch riders couldn't get up to the the platoons, they used the company commander's jeep to go up and down to the platoons. Oh, sorry. Yeah, up to the platoons with these jeeps, because there's so much mud in it, the motor, you couldn't get through the motorbikes. And the only thing to get through there are jeeps, but I mean, and all you saw coming back for days, day in and day out, was a service call with these Royal Medical Corps stretcher bearers with this two stretchers on top of these jeeps. And that's all you saw come back from every day, day in and day out, you know, bringing all the wounded back in it on these carriers, like, you know, on these jeeps. Because nothing else could get, I mean, the ambulances couldn't get out of there. And it was, you know, really, really a bad do up there it was. And then after that, we stayed there for about a month, stayed up there in all this Harrison fire, like, you know, out there supporting the infantry. And we made our way up, we Hill 112. But we come back from there and another division took over from us there. I couldn't tell you what division it was, no idea. 43rd, I think. And they eventually took Hill 112 because there's a memorial up there now.
What did you do on the hill?
Well, the infantry went up there and they just got drove back, and I think that we was due to, this other div was going to take over from us, because I suppose we had such a bashing on that plane, and withdrew us back, and then we went back round to Corn, and we waited there for the Battle of Corn to come up, when the 500 bomber raid appeared, and these bombers come in very low, and we pulled back about a mile and a half from the Corn, and they dropped these bombs, these 500 bomber raid, and there was brick dust, and that, you come back, you couldn't see your hand in front of you, about a mile and a half back, you couldn't see your hand in front of you. Now, after the raid, then, and it died down a bit, the third div went into Corn, but we couldn't get through Corn itself then, because we had to wait for bulldozers to push us through, because the road was just simply blocked with rubble, and the carriers wouldn't go over top the rubble, so we had to just wait for the bulldozers to come and clear the way through while the infantry went ahead of us and cleared the streets, so we could go right through Corn. And we ended up in, from there, we went on to the Falaise and Falaise Gap. And on the way to Falaise, a young chap named Blondie Siemens, his carrier got blown up, because the Americans, we come across the Americans, they said the road's all clear down, it's all no clear of mine, but Lieutenant Betts went down with the carrier and that, and he got blown up. And poor, you know, one name, he got killed. And then we went on to Falaise, third div went into Falaise, like, you know, and we was in that attack on there with the German up infantry and all that ran Falaise there.
What part did you play in that?
Just some cover and fire, man, you know, keep going with the infantry. If they called for a cover and fire, you know, machine gun support, we carried on giving support all the time. In some of our areas, we had a mortar company as well. They used to come with us and give us support, like for the attack on Falaise and all that. Apparently, it was a whole battalion with the old div that went through and took Falaise. We never took Falaise itself, but we was in the Falaise area, and don't know, because there is a memorial in the third div in Falaise Gap.
And
that was a terrible onslaught. There it was for the Germans.
Were you in the same carrier all the time in
Normandy? Yeah, same carrier. I carried the same carrier all the time, yeah.
Did it have a name?
Pardon?
Did it have a name?
No, never had no names on. No, never no names on ours.
So your carrier wasn't hit?
No, I was lucky. I would get away with it. It was only hit by shrapnel off the shells that come down, like, you know, into the side, but which was quarter in this bed armour plate, and I mean, the shells used to print a fair distance, so it never penetrated the armour on there. We was very lucky, I think, with most of the carriers. Like, I mean, we never had a great lot of casualties on the carriers itself, because they're a very reliable thing, engine-wise, like, you know, and track-wise. Because we was on the move nearly all the time, like, you know, from area to area, like.
What opinion did you form about the German enemy?
Well, the only thing I was thought they must have been very brave, I mean, because after the bombing on Korn itself, I mean, you thought after that there wouldn't have been no survivors or nobody to fight back at you, but I mean, they still come into their foxholes and fought back. It's just so nothing really happened, like, you know, I mean, I suppose they're used to it. I suppose a lot of them been to the Russian front, hadn't they, and brought back from the Russian front back to there. And some was Poles and odds and ends of different makeup of different regiments that were there, which a lot of those give themselves up easy, the Poles of that. But I mean, of the actual Germans, was like the SS. I mean, those fanatical, you see, they just fought to the end, more or less. They never.
And then?
Then we made our way from there. We went on to into Belgium. We stopped off in Belgium there. This was before the Arnhem affair came about, because we'd run short of ammunition, food, and everything, I presume, because they took all their big vehicles from us. And they went right back to Normandy to bring supplies up for the Arnhem do. And then they, while they was going back there, we carried on away from Belgium into Holland. And we made our way to the Grave Bridge. And we took over from, we went over Grave Bridge after it was taken by the 101st Airborne. Because in Belgium we never had hardly any fighting at all. It was just a clear run all the way through Belgium. We ended up at Grave Bridge, and it was already been taken by the 101st Airborne. So we went over there and relieved the 101st Airborne, because they wanted to go to Arnhem. So we just concentrated over the other side of the river, and well, they fought their way to Arnhem, the Airborne, 1st Airborne. That's where they went to. Where they got there, I don't know, in that respect. But then we went from there. We went farther into Holland. We went on a place called, which the Americans had to go with an armoured div to take Overloon and Venray. And we got there, and there was this big barrage set up from all the way back these long toms, and a terrific barrage went up this day, and we went to take Overloon, which took us 7 days to take.
What's a long tom?
Big guns, American big long toms. And then there was the 5.5s, then there was the ordinary guns for them, ordinary artillery, what was div. But while I was there, this day when this big attack went in, the big barrage went up, there was an Oscar observer up in the air, and a shell must have hit that, and it blew us clean out the skies. And he was observing for the artillery, you know, for a spotter plane he was. And then we had the 11th Armoured with us, and it took us 7 days to take it, Overloon. And we fought through 7 days, went through Overloon. Then we went on to Venray from there, and then we took right down to the River Maas from there, went down to the River Maas, then that was nearly in December 1944, and the snow came. Well, we were down on the River Maas, snow, yeah, we got snow, well, we never got snowed in, but there was snow there, and we used to have grid on patrols of a night time from there, with a snowsuit on, put a white snowsuit on, and wrap your guns all up in white material, and we used to have to wait on different patrols down to the river to see if we could catch any Germans for bring them back for interrogation, because the Germans, they send patrols over regular from their side over, and we used to have to go down there, and we used to, there were two or three houses laid out in the snow there, and the Germans used to occupy that night times, and they used to chuck plates and crockery down to attract your attention, to, you know, to see if you're going to open fire or get out there. But I mean, we never done. We just laid low and let them. And then before dawn broke, we used to make our way back to the unit where we was in Vanrey. But while we was, one do while we was there, the Germans did had a patrol over one night, and their machine guns was all set up around this field, and the German patrol walked right around the field. And they never done any done anything to the machine, and I don't know where they see them, where they didn't. It was dark, and of course the chaps on what was on guard, there were two blokes on at the time. They alerted the other blokes that was in the trenches, like, you know, went round and told them German patrol, and German patrol passed round, went through. The chaps cut out and picked his hand grenades up and threw them. Not one went off. Anyway, and there's one chap there called Calvert, Lance Corporal Calvert. He fired one shot from his rifle that night. That's all that was fired. Never had no return fire from the Germans. And next morning when we goes out and has a look, the German patrol leader was been shot dead. Just evidently, Lance Corporal Calvert, he down, he shot this patrol leader, and he was dead there. And when they looked round, and all the hand grenades was there, and the eyes of the split pins had pulled out. It split. Instead of the split pin being pulled out with a key ring, they'd been sabotaged or something, like, you know, we didn't know, nobody knew. So we just, the REs come along and picked them all up, like, you know, and just, when they took the fuses back out and put new split pins in. Well, we presume that's what they done, we don't know.
Who do you think had sabotaged them?
We don't know. We were done over before we got them, because, I mean, it's a thing you didn't look at, really, you know. I mean, you see the split pin, the key ring in there. But what happened, the eye of the key, the split pin itself, it split open, see, so, you know, just the key ring come away and just left the split pin in the Mills hand grenade. So we never used that. We had them after that again, like, you know, but we had a good look at them for those, see if they were tampered with, like, you know. We don't know who tampered with, whether it was done at an ordnance place or whether it was, I don't think they ever went in to find out who, what happened really in the long run. Nobody knows. Anyway, then we went from there. It was Christmas Day, we had Christmas Day, and we took turns in going back from Christmas Day to into a farmhouse in Holland where the battalion cooks laid on a Christmas dinner for us all. You know, there was turkey and all the Christmas pudding, all the lot we had. You know, we had these tables laid out in this barn for the battalion headquarters of cooks and that, and we went back in companies. One company went back while the other one took their place, you know, on the River Mars. You know, we just left the skeleton people there on the River Mars while we went back for our meal, and that's how we had our Christmas lunch, the old battalion. And I've spoken to ever so many chaps since, even the power of my friend. He said, we never had no turkey or Christmas pudding. He said, you was lucky. I said, we did. I don't think they believed me, but we did. We went back and had this Christmas turkey and Christmas pudding at this barn. And then, of course, there was the Ardennes come up, you know, during the time that. And I never went, but some of the other companies, they took their carriers and machine guns and went round to the Ardennes side, like, you know. It was all, you had a job to get along because it was all covered in snow, the roads, like, you know. In those track vehicles, we got hardened down. It was just like going on ice. But we stayed down on the river, I can't hear, but a couple of the other companies went back to the Ardennes.
So when you were on the Mars, you weren't using your carriers?
No.
You were just on foot?
Yorkshire's on foot, yes. We used to have to start them up every so often, because we never know, no antifreeze in them. No antifreeze. We used to start them up every night, start the engine up, warm up, just keep the water from freezing. Now, we never used our carriers then until we broke out from there, and then the REs put a bridge across the River Mars, and away we went over the River Mars to the Richfield Forest. We went through Gok and Cleve, well-known places that are mentioned quite a lot, and we made our way. We just, after the Richfield Forest had been taken, and we just more or less travelled day and night from then onward into Germany, through Germany, and then we stopped by the Rhine, a place called Wesel, and we stayed this side of the Rhine, and there was some pioneer corps there, and they were doing all the smoke screen with these big containers. There was just one big, you couldn't see across the Rhine, it was just one vast of smoke. And the Royal Engineers in the Div, they was down apparently opposite of Wesel, and they dug the banks away for the landing craft to be pushed down into the water. So when the big barrage went up, we laid down a barrage in this side with the machine guns and all the artillery, like the 3rd Div and that. But we weren't the assault troops across here because the 51st Highland was. Because that major, that General Rennie, what was in 3rd Div, landed D-Day, he got wounded, so they gave him the option of going across with the 51st Highland Div across the Rhine. And the 51st Highland was across the Rhine, and after they put the bridge across, we went across. The REs laid a big Bailey bridge right across the Rhine. So after that, we made our way after we give them all cover and fire for their to take Wesel and all that. And from there on, we just moved inland. I can't tell you the name of the place, I don't know how close we went through. So anyhow, we went on to the outskirts of Bremen then.
Was there much fighting on your push through Germany?
Yeah, quite a bit of, you know, sporadic, you know, held hold-ups with different SS and that regiments, like, you know, on... I'll tell you one... I can't think of the name of the place we had to... where the Guards Armour was, went through. The Guards Armour wouldn't go over this bridge, and we was up there, a machine gun, and they said, just, you take the bridge. So we drove over and took the bridge, and once we got the other side, we stopped and had something to eat. The Guards Armour went through us then. And there was a German 88 there, which they were ready to pull out the Germans for us because all the legs were pulled up in that. And while we was there, my mate, Georgie Nutt, he said to us, he said, let's just have a wander around after we had something to eat. And we went up and found this 88, and he jumped up on the seat, and he pulled a lever, and one of these legs come down. Just missed me, and it took my boot off, ripped my boot right off. And I goes hobbling back to the sergeant, and I said, what have you been up to? Like, you know, and of course, I said, well, it was the legs on the 88, see, they dropped these four legs drop out, see, to support the gun. And of course, one, he pulled the lever and they'd come down. And it hit me there, and lucky enough, it never damaged my foot. All it done was rip my boot apart. Tore the laces right apart. And I went back, hobbling a bit, you know, I thought, cool, I've hurt my foot in the side. He said, what have you done? I said, cool, look. He showed in the boot. He said, well, you'll have to put we had pencils with the slot, you know, in our kit bag. He said, you'll have to put something on. He said, because we're going to start driving in a minute. And he said, how'd your foot feel? I said, well, don't feel too bad. And he said, it's one didn't smash it. Of course, he reckoned because the ground was so soft, it hit my foot, and my foot must have went in the soft soil a bit. But I thought myself lucky, I really was cool. Anyhow, so we went on from there, and we went on to, carried on through, went on to the outskirts of Bremen, and we stayed there about a week, I think, before we attacked Bremen. Got a bit of a build-up. And the Germans, they flooded the front of Bremen in front of us, where we had to go across, and we had to get these water buffaloes to take us across in the in our carriage because the water's so deep, in the infantry to attack Bremen. And then we took Bremen, we went into Bremen, took it, and the infantry's with us, and we took the German barracks.
What? And how did you take it?
Well, the infantry went in through and sold the German barracks out, and got all the what they could out of the prison, and the others retreated back. And we stayed there night times, and while we were there overnight, the Germans had come back into the barracks again. So we had to get them out the next day again.